Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here through the hour to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Want to talk with Zorba? Here is the number to call, 800-462-7413. Your phone calls through the hour, some interesting research to talk about?
Yes. When milk is packaged in one container, it may taste better to children than when it's packaged in another container.
Interesting stuff.
You betcha. And humor in the aging brain. When you get older, is it harder to tell a joke? What does that have to say about memory of you and the people you're talking to?
Was that supposed to be funny?
No, not at all.
Okay, that coming
not
up.
Not at all, Tom.
We have our medical myth buster, and what's our recipe?
Smoky turkey quesadillas. Easy. Very low calorie, very enjoyable.
And we get to eat them, and you don't.
Yes,
unless you make them yourself. Again, that number is 800-462-7413. Zorba, a listener, joins in now from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hello. How are you doing?
Fine. How can we help you?
I am a mobile field technician, and I have a real problem with overheating and dehydrating.
What do you do as a mobile field technician?
I am a mobile crane repair technician, and we generally have to fix them wherever they're at.
And it's hot where you're working. Oklahoma is not known for its cold weather. It's known for its hot weather.
That's the truth.
Yeah, that's exactly it. How long have you been in the business?
8 years.
8 years, so. Now, so you feel like you're dehydrated? Do you actually feel like you're dehydrated, or do you notice your urine, you don't urinate very much when you're working? I mean, that's one sort of measurement, gross measurement of hydration, is whether or not you have to go to the washroom very often.
And you feel weaker, probably, true?
I go through various cycles as it ramps up.
As it revs up. So what do you drink? What do you do in order to try to keep hydrated? What do you do right now?
Well, I used to try to consume a lot of Gatorade and items like that, but I heard that one Gatorade a day is all you should consume, more than that.
Well, you can consume more than one Gatorade a day, but you certainly don't need the calories, and you don't necessarily need the sodium potassium in there. You know, a couple Gatorades are fine, but water is the best. When you're dehydrated, water is undoubtedly the best thing to do. And, you know, one of the issues about hydration is really interesting. If we look at the number of people who die of dehydration versus overhydration in runners, joggers, marathon runners, it turns out there are about 5 to 10 people a year who die of too much water, and hardly anyone dies of too little water when they're actually out doing work. Older people who are stuck in a house without air conditioning where it's super hot, they're the ones that die of dehydration, or people who have illness. But frankly, for active people such as yourself, it's a matter of just kind of, you know, drinking when you're thirsty and not drinking when you're not thirsty. But sounds like you get behind in your hydration.
That could be it. It seems like I'm playing catch-up throughout a large portion of the day.
Yeah, what do you have for breakfast in the morning? What do you tell me about your breakfast? That may be part of the key.
Well, for about the last 3 weeks, I've tried to skip breakfast because it makes me really tired if I eat breakfast.
Well, I'll tell you something. That, I think, may be your problem. What you want to do is this. What time do you go to sleep at night?
Between 11 and 1.
Okay, so 11 and 1 o'clock you go to sleep. And if you skip breakfast, what do you eat at about noon, something like that?
Usually around 10:30, I'll stop and have some sort of a heated snack.
Okay, so what you're doing is you've got a 10 to 11 hour fast. That's basically what you're doing. You're fasting for 11 hours, and then about, you know, one halfway through that hour, you start doing really heavy work. You're outside, it's hot, it's warm, and meanwhile, you're still in your fast, and that's why you're behind. You're behind because you need to have more hydration in the morning. My recommendation is that you find a cereal that's high fiber. I think that's the way to do it. That you drink milk. You have a little bit of milk. Milk, I think, is good. It has calcium in it. We tend to be calcium deficient as our body matures. We don't drink nearly as much milk. Mm-hmm. And you put a little piece of fruit in there. And that's what you do. And that may be the whole thing. I don't think it's just hydration. I think it's hydration and calories.
He says he gets tired, though, if he eats.
Well, you don't want to have too much. You figure out how much you have to eat in order to not be tired. If I have too much, for instance, at lunch, it makes me tired. If I have the right amount at lunch, I'm not tired at all. It gives me energy. So, and energy doesn't come from a donut. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Sure. Thanks for joining us. 800-462-7413.
You know, Mom was right. breakfast is the most important meal of the day.
That's what I believe, too. 800-462-7413. Interesting research, Zorba, on the food tastes and kids. Tell us about it.
Yes. This was a particular study looking at, among other things, carrots and milk and how it's packaged. And at first flush, you go, oh, that's interesting. It shows you what advertising does. But I'm going to talk about that. If you look at French fries, same French fry in a McDonald's case, it tasted much better than in a plain bag.
Kids three to five years of age.
77% said they loved them in the bag. They loved him in the McDonald's thing, and only 13% said they liked him in the white
bag.
In
the plain package.
Yeah, and about 1 out of 10 said they
And the same thing with other
Well,
things.
Milk was interesting. 61% said they liked the milk in a McDonald's cup, and only 21%, I mean one-third, said they liked them in basically a plain cup.
The power of marketing, the power of advertising,
well,
the power
and
of
and the same thing
fast
with carrots.
Food.
Well, but it's not just that. I remember as a child, I really remember this, I loved opening up the little carton, making the little spout, and drinking the milk out of the spout. And I remember thinking, you know, those little milk cartons that I would get in school, I like this so much better than milk at home. My mom would pour it out of a glass jug, and she'd put it in a glass, and, you know, I didn't like that at all, but I loved it out of the carton. And I remember this, you know, I must have been 5, 6, or 7. So it's not just marketing. It's that kids like to have certain things, and they like to eat out of certain cups and certain glasses. And I think there's a take-home message from this.
I think the fast food people are starting to put healthy things into these kids' meals that they serve.
Well, we're talking about carrot sticks, and we're talking about milk.
Yeah.
Well, milk is certainly better than Coke.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. High fructose corn syrup, which is awful. And carrots are better than French fries. So, I mean, the reality is, if they're eating healthy food, I don't care where they get it. I don't care if they get it from McDonald's or they get it from home. Yes, certainly much better to have it at home. No doubt about it. Home-cooked meals are always better, but we don't always ascribe and do what we're supposed to be doing. So find healthy choices in a restaurant that your child will like and then try to get them to eat it. And this may be part of the key.
But still, you have the problem of when the kid comes home, the kid doesn't want to drink the milk or eat the carrots.
Absolutely.
Because they are
absolutely.
Unless you take
that McDonald's cup and you bring it home with you and you pour the milk in the McDonald's cup. That's easy to do. Carrots are going to be a little hard to put back in the McDonald's plastic bag, but the cup is not a hard thing to do. And in fact, didn't you have a favorite cup as a child?
No.
Oh, gosh. I thought everybody had a favorite cup as a child. Yeah, look at Adam. He had a favorite cup as a child. He's looking at his cup right now. You can see there are tears going down his face thinking about his favorite cup.
Adam is still a child. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. To a listener now, Zorba, in Reidsville, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I have a 7-year-old daughter who gets frequent nosebleeds. She's been getting them since she was about 2 years old. And it doesn't worry me so much when she gets minor ones, but occasionally she'll get one that doesn't stop bleeding. It'll bleed for an hour or two.
Wow, that must be really, I mean, that's, you know, anytime anybody gets a nosebleed, it's a lot of problems. It's bloody and it's embarrassing and, you know, it's kind of frightening to people.
Yeah, my husband went through that when he was a kid. So, you know, I learned not to panic so much because he went through that.
So he said, don't worry, darling. It's just a nosebleed, right?
Well, it was just hard and not knowing whether it was going to stop or not.
I used to get nosebleeds as a child, and I remember my mother getting really upset, and I sort of remember getting upset just like she got upset. Mm-hmm. Now, have you gone to the doctor for this at all?
Yeah, we went a couple of years ago, and he gave us some suggestions, putting bacitracin, a double antibiotic ointment, upper nostrils, and we had a humidifier for a while, but that didn't seem to help. It seems to be better now, except when she gets colds. The colds seem to really bring them on.
You hit exactly what it is. What happens is the blood vessels in the nose are very close to the surface. You scratch your nose, you itch your nose, and for a child especially, they can bleed. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's due to a chronic infection that can be in the nose that can actually cause the bleeding too. But basically what the treatment is, we humidify the air, like you said, with a humidifier. Sometimes that works, especially when they have a cold. You put in a moisturizing ointment that's an antibacterial antibacterial ointment. Sometimes a nasal spray called Ocean. It's a saline nasal spray. You can buy it under a whole bunch of different names. Ocean is just one of them, over the counter. And you spray the nose. You teach your child to spray the nose periodically throughout the day. Hard to get kids to do that, but...
we've had a problem, you know, just... making a habit of doing every day.
You know, it's just for, that's difficult to do. And then finally, if that fails, cauterizing it with chemical cauterizing.
Yeah, that's what we were starting to think about. And I was just wondering, is it very effective at stopping the nose?
Yeah, it's pretty effective. It works in a lot of people. And it doesn't have to be, you often don't have to numb the nose. You can use a chemical cautery with something called silver nitrate sticks. Your family doc can do it, or an ENT doc can do it. A lot of pediatricians also do that. And the cauterization of the nose often works. If you're having recurrent nosebleeds, I would definitely go to cauterization. You may still have to vaporize the room when she has a cold and put some ointment in there. But good luck to you.
All right, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for calling, 800-462-7413. Speaking of noses, Zorba, let's take a quick question from Jean in Cedarburg, Wisconsin. Jean suffers, or perhaps his wife suffers, from his constant snoring. He's looking for tips on how to suppress his snoring.
Well, there's no absolute tip to suppress snoring. There are a lot of issues with snoring. A lot of people just go in the other room or put in earplugs. Losing weight can make a difference. Wearing those strips on your nose, you know, sleepies are under a variety of names that kind of open up the nostrils. For some people, that makes a difference. Making sure you don't sleep on your back. Some people wear a ping pong ball or tennis ball hooked to the back of their T-shirt or pajamas. You're making a yucky face.
Well, that wouldn't be very comfortable.
Well, do you sleep on your back?
I tend not to.
See, I only sleep on my side, so it wouldn't matter to me. That'll do it. Surgeries, not very effective at all, not very effective. Snoring, though, can be a symptom of sleep apnea, and that's the real issue. A lot of snorers actually have sleep apnea, and for them, they need treatment. They need a machine called a CPAP that helps them breathe because they're at risk for stroke. So for some snorers, you do that. But I wish there were one solid thing we could say. I wish there was the snoring handbook that would allow you to actually come up with good answers.
Sounds like a bunch of helpful things.
Helpful tip. The final thing is that for some, it's a symptom also of allergies. And a nasal spray, a steroid nasal spray in the nose, can make a difference. All these things, try them out, see if they work. And if they don't work, well, it's the next room for you, guy.
You can join the fun each week. Just send us your thoughts in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Again, our toll-free number, if you have a question for Zorba, 800-462-7413. Zorba, a listener, joins in now from Atlanta, Georgia. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Well, I have I guess it's kind of an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle on my mother's side, years ago when I was a small child, was diagnosed with a herniated esophagus. And he had the feeling of sometimes food getting lodged in his throat. And in the past few years, I'm 38, so I'd probably say 10 years ago, I started experiencing this problem as well. And I don't know if this is a valid diagnosis.
The valid diagnosis is we don't have one. So that's, you know, that's the first step. You know, it may or may not be. Let me ask you questions. Mm-hmm. So when you're eating, food gets stuck? Does it actually get stuck, or does it just sort of feel full when it's going down?
It feels like it gets stuck, and I automatically lose any kind of, hunger. I'm not hungry at all. I have to actually sometimes go and... it feels like I got a hiccup and try to, stick my finger down my throat or anything like that.
I kind of have to force
a burp out.
You've got to force something out to try to get that out. I'll tell you what you need. This is important. First of all, this may be due to acid, even if you don't have acid reflux symptoms. Do you get an upset stomach? Do you get a burning sensation in the pit of the stomach or anything of that nature?
I do get heartburn occasionally, like if I've worked a long hour. hours.
Okay,
or something.
So not all the time. I've got a couple of suggestions. Mm-hmm. My first suggestion, simple, easy, cheap, you don't have to see your doctor. Go out to the pharmacy, get Prilosec 20 milligrams a day, take one tablet for a week every single day, see what happens to this. If it doesn't get better, double it to two tablets and stay on the Prilosec for 1 month, okay? The end of 1 week, 20 milligrams a day, that's all they come in, Prilosec, OTC. The end of 1 week, if you're not better, double it, stay on it for a month, see what happens. If it goes away, then your problem is acid. We've got our answer. We don't have to go any further. You're eating, you're drinking normally, you're not having a problem. I don't think you have to see a doctor. Now, let's assume it doesn't go away. Then what you need is you need a gastroscope. You need somebody to look down into your esophagus and actually see what's going on, look into your stomach, see if you've got an ulcer, see if you've got something called Barrett's esophagitis, which is a certain type of a look of at the end of the stomach, beginning of the esophagus that we don't like, and to see basically if you have a tightening in the esophagus. There's something called a stenosis, which means a tightening, and it can happen in an esophagus. And what they do is they go down and they blow it up a little bit. They don't use a balloon, but they use something called a bougie, which is a French word, and they put it down and they kind of open and stretch the esophagus, and it keeps it from happening. But they don't stretch the esophagus until they look down there to see if there's something there, because we have to make sure that this is not cancer. Mm-hmm. That's the really key issue. If food gets stuck, sometimes it gets stuck because there's a growth there, a precancer or the beginning of a cancer, and it's got to be looked at. So if the Prilosec doesn't work first, I'd give it a month, then you need to be scoped.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure, we appreciate the call. Thanks a lot. Again, our toll-free number, if you have a question for Zorba, 800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba, in Albany, Georgia. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Oh, I have a question for Zorba. What would he recommend? I was diagnosed about 10 years ago with Raynaud's phenomenon, and how I can boost my immune system to just live a healthier life longer.
Well, first of all,
tell us all about Raynaud's.
Yeah, Raynaud's phenomena is not an immune problem. I mean, it's from there are other things that can cause it and can be associated with it, and it happens on its own. It's basically when you touch something cold, your fingers, the circulation changes. Your fingers can become white. It can become painful, a little bit uncomfortable. And that's what it is. It's called Raynaud's phenomena. Raynaud's disease is something different, but also has the same quality. And it's often related to pills you're taking, can be related to certain diseases, and it just happens on its own. So now, why do you think it's an immune problem, or did somebody tell you?
Well, I guess I maybe asked you wrong. I know he said eventually it can lead to lupus.
Well, no, it can be a symptom of lupus. It doesn't actually lead to lupus. In other words, there's certain diseases, such as autoimmune diseases, that can be associated with it. But I think the vast majority, 50, 60, 70, 80%, just happen on their own. And they have nothing to do with anything autoimmune. But if somebody comes in and they present with it, you want to look at them and say, are there other problems? But it doesn't become lupus. It could be symptomatic. And if your doc was worried about lupus, you know, there's some tests you do to see whether or not you have it. How long have you had it?
10 years ago. I had
10 years.
Sores at the end of my toes.
Okay, so 10 years ago you had it. If you had lupus, we probably would know by now. 10 years is a pretty long time. What do you do to keep it from happening? It can be a little uncomfortable.
Well, he did put me on Norvasc because I had numbness on my left hand, on my fingertips.
Uh-huh. Did that work at all?
Yes.
Norvasc is a pill for blood pressure that opens up the arteries and helps what's called vasodilatation, gets more blood to an area. For some people, they have swelling and they have a feeling of warmth that they don't like. So for somebody who has cold, that feeling of warmth is really, really good. Okay, put you on Norvasc. Did that work? Do you double sock at all?
Well, I had just moved to Albany, Georgia a couple years ago.
Yeah, right, so you don't have. Now, did you move to Albany, Georgia because of the Raynaud's?
Well, it was a blessing.
Yes, it was a blessing. And that is what some people do, though. They say, look, I can't stand this cold weather. My fingers get cold. Mm-hmm. My toes get cold. I'm out of here. I'm going to hot weather, and I can deal with it. And that is also.
So much better.
That's also a treatment. So thank you so much for your calling.
Thank you.
Stay well.
We appreciate it. Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. Our recipe is coming up. It's a good one, Zorba.
Yes. It's smoky turkey quesadillas.
We also have some more research for you, our medical myth buster, and lots more of your calls. Right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI. Public Radio International. Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. But before we get back to the phone, Zorba, sitting in front of us is smoky turkey quesadillas.
That's right, smoky turkey quesadillas. Do you love quesadillas?
I like quesadillas.
I like quesadillas. I love Mexican food. I love hot, spicy Mexican food.
My wife loves Mexican choice is enchiladas.
And that's it. I like enchiladas. Enchiladas are good.
Yeah. But quesadillas are good.
Enchiladas are good. But one of the things we want to look at is how do you make something that is relatively low fat, that's tasty, that's good, that you can have as a snack, that's that has certain qualities to it. And we're always looking for that because food is a preoccupation of American culture.
Right.
And so this is great. It uses some good things. It is, from a fat point of view, it only has it has 8 grams of fat, but very little saturated fat. So start out with 7-inch flour tortillas.
So this will serve
six people. That's
okay.
Right. So you've got six.
Six
tortillas.
Flour tortillas,
right.
7 inches.
Right. And 6 ounces of low-fat Monterey Jack cheese that is shredded.
6 ounces of low-fat Monterey Jack cheese shredded.
Now
the low-fat doesn't taste as good
Well, when it's melted, I have discovered that when it's melted, that's the big issue, that I don't like the taste of low-fat cheese when it's not melted. So, for instance, when I buy cheddar, and I buy cheddar at our local farmer's market whenever I can, I have a delicious cheddar cheese. It's called 8 Years Cheddar, and it sits there for 8 years. It is the most cheddariest cheddar I've ever had in my life. It's unbelievable. And I have a small amount of it, because it's just brimming with taste. And generally, low-fat cheeses may not have as much taste, but they are really good melted. And what I recommend is you go to your store and you don't buy one little package, you buy 3 or 4 packages.
Mm-hmm.
Taste them plain. Taste the melted. Find out the taste that works for you. Don't just stop at one. There really is a difference. And if you go to Cook's Illustrated, which is my favorite website, they rate things like cheese and they rate them for taste, and they're great. So I recommend a low-fat Monterey Jack cheese shredded that you like the taste of.
Okay.
6 ounces of fat-free smoked turkey slices.
6 ounces of fat-free smoked turkey slices.
Right. Now, you may get low-fat turkey slices, but the issue about turkey is this. Dark meat is cheaper than light meat, so light meat turkey slices cost more.
Yeah. But
so
they're the better for you, obviously.
Well, they're better for you. But sometimes light meat can have oil added to it in order to give it a smoother taste. So what you want is a low-fat, in this case, a fat-free smoked turkey slice, so you don't need to have that animal fat.
Okay.
A bunch of grapes cut in half.
A bunch of grapes?
Mm-hmm.
How interesting.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch
Very
of grapes cut in half.
Yeah. Green grapes. Green grapes would be good. You probably could use purple grapes, but cut in half seedless.
You don't cut the bunch in half. You cut
that's
the grapes
cut
in
the,
half.
That's
okay.
Right. Cut in half. You don't cut the bunch in half.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we've got our spice of fresh cilantro. You're going to use fresh cilantro.
Fresh cilantro to taste.
If you don't like cilantro, don't use it, but you could use parsley. Parsley has a different taste, a much milder taste, obviously, than cilantro.
They're
you
both
could
good.
Even use basil if you don't like cilantro.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, that's
okay.
Some good taste. Half teaspoon of ground cumin.
Half a little tea, ground cumin.
A tablespoonful of fresh lime juice.
Oh, a big tea, fresh lime juice.
Fresh is best.
Uh-huh.
Fresh is best.
Uh-huh.
And then salt. For something like this, I either use salt in a grinder, sea salt I can pour, or kosher salt. And the reason is the salt crystals are a little bit lumpier and they give a better taste, just like ground pepper on
well,
the surface.
I'm going to try one of these while you're
You try one and I will tell
together.
Our listeners how to eat this. So first, arrange the tortillas. Cover half of the tortilla with cheese, turkey, grapes, and cilantro. Sprinkle with cumin. Fold the tortilla in half, okay? Then heat a large nonstick skillet to medium heat. So you're not going to put any oil in there at all. How is it?
It's delicious.
It's delicious. Mm-hmm. I can tell by your face. Cook the tortillas one at a time until golden brown. That's about 3 or 4 minutes. Now, preheat the oven and put them in the oven when you're done with each one. Otherwise, the first one's going to be cold by the time the last one is finished. Mm-hmm. You want to put them in the oven. Then flip and brush with lime juice. You brush the tortilla with lime juice. And then season it with salt, as I said, kosher salt or the salt that you can grind. Cook another 3 or 4 minutes. Repeat with the remaining quesadillas. Take them out of the oven. Serve them with maybe just a little margarita, and you will have a long sweet
life. This is your recipe, so you know it's delicious. But Adam did a good job of putting it together, too.
This is great. This is fabulous.
So,
you better stop chewing.
Let us send this recipe to you. Address your request to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, zip 53706. Be sure to enclose a self-addressed stamped business-sized envelope. We'll send the recipe along to you.
Or come to our website at zorbapastor.org. You can also see links to our resource page and sign up for our weekly podcast.
Our telephone number is 800-462-7413. And Zorba, listener with us now in Logan, Utah. Hi.
Hi. How are you guys?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, my wife and I are, I guess, like everybody else, we are self-proclaimed healthy people.
Not like everyone else.
Well, some people.
Yep.
And we try to eat healthy, but my sister as well tries to eat healthy and gets her husband to put the snacks down, eat fruits and veggies and good food. And she is pregnant, and we were speaking the other day about her health, and she's trying to gain the appropriate amount of weight, I think 1 pound per week or something like that for the baby. And she was telling us that while eating, if you have enough fiber in your meal, that can sometimes counteract any of the bad fats in the meal. And so I kind of snidely said, so you mean I can go to Taco Bell and with a handful of fiber or Fiber Bran or All Bran or anything like that, and it'll be okay for me? And we had a little argument about that, but she was serious, saying that fiber can sometimes counteract the bad fats in a meal. And I wasn't so sure, but I figured I'd call the expert on this.
Yeah, wouldn't there be something? Here it is. You go in at Taco Bell. You know what they would have if that were the case? They'd have free fiber capsules when you walked in the door. And they'd say, just take these fiber capsules, eat what we have, and then you'll have, that'll be it. That'll be it. We can get the fiber to get down the cholesterol, so have all the Taco Bell you want to have. Well, it does turn out that fiber counteracts cholesterol. We know that fiber can lower cholesterol, soluble and insoluble fiber. The insoluble fiber is good to lower the risk of colon cancer, which is always in the top four leading causes of cancer. When we look at soluble fiber, it reduces the risk of heart disease, which is also, which is also excellent. Having fiber is good, but it doesn't counteract the bad stuff. It's just one of the good things you're doing. So, it's like going out to Taco Bell and then jogging afterwards. You're still going out to Taco Bell. There's separate risk factors that make a difference. The thing about fat is that it's lifetime fat that really matters. Many years ago, when they thought that heart attacks, this is back in the Korean War time, mid-century, they thought that heart attacks were problems with older people because old guys, quote, 60 years of age, that's how old they were dying of heart attacks. And they thought, well, you'd live until 60, 65, and you die, which is not sort of the concept today at all. And what they discovered when they looked at autopsies of young 18-year-old Korean veterans, Korean guys, young boys who died, and they looked at their heart and they did autopsies and they found the beginning of cardiovascular disease, cholesterol deposits in the arteries at the age of 18. And that's when they came up, a big wow. And that was where the idea came, hey, maybe this isn't a problem with old folks. Maybe it's a problem of lifetime fat. And that's really where this all stemmed from. It stemmed from those that Korean War data and other things. And so looking at Taco Bell now and fat now is kind of important for your health 20, 30 years down the line, but it's really important for your health and your weight today, because people who eat a lot of fat tend to be fatter. I mean, that's just the reality of it. It's tablespoon of oil is 100 calories, tablespoon of sugar is 45 calories. So oil really packs in the calories. So you won this particular argument with, this is with your sister, right?
Right. And so, well, I don't think that I will be saying it to her face, but she hears the program, she will
not
realize
at all. She's your sister.
On her own terms.
And she's your sister, so I'm sure you've learned how to communicate with her.
Right. Anyway, thanks so much.
Sure. We appreciate the call. Thank you very much. 800-462-7413. To Hopewell Junction, New York now. Hi.
Hey, Tom. Zorba, how are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I've been doing a little bit of research. I have attention deficit disorder, and I've been doing a little research into carbs and diet as a means of controlling it. We went through the whole rigors of trying out all the different medications they have available and found that they do nothing but make me completely crazy. This is my wife's assessment of the situation, not my own. So I've been trying to figure out how to control it. And one thing that I've found is that carbohydrates can affect it quite a bit. And I've found also that carbohydrates can make it difficult for you to lower your cholesterol rate if you have too many carbs in your diet. I was wondering what you could tell me about this and how can I help control my brain.
Your brain from, in other words, when you eat carbohydrates, your wife says, oh, I know that you ate a lot of carbs today because look at the way you're acting.
That was research that I came up with. The carbohydrates have something to do with attention deficit disorder.
Well,
I'm crazy from ADD, but the only thing that makes me worse is the medication.
It's the medication for ADD. Well, we know that for people with ADD, that different foods that they eat, different drinks that they drink, how they sort of plan their day can make a big difference. I don't think anyone has ever looked at carbohydrates and said that makes attention deficit disorder worse. But we know that some people who eat a lot of carbohydrates, for instance, children who eat a lot of sugar, you know, even though the studies show, quote, they're not hyperactive, I had 4 kids, and if we gave them too much sugar, they were off the wall, and they appear to me to be hyperactive, so I don't really care about the studies. You know, it's what I observe individually, and, you know, that can be the issue. But there's no evidence that carbohydrates cause ADHD and that it will make it worse. But there is evidence that having a more sort of ritualized way of looking at attention deficit disorder, eating, doing things, can make a significant difference. What do you do for your ADHD right now, for your attention deficit?
I kind of punted. I don't do anything. I'm not quite sure what to do.
Yeah. What do you do for a living?
I'm a cabinet maker.
Oh, okay. So
kind of requires a lot of attention.
I bet it does require a lot of attention. But it's not sitting at a desk, which you couldn't do, right?
No, I tried that when I was younger, and I couldn't. I didn't have the ability.
Right, you did not have the ability to sit at the desk. And frankly, for adults, you know, the real issue is children in school, because we have this ritualized school behavior where kids have to sit at their desk, and
Right. That's
how they have to learn. And that's the problem. With adults, you know, you choose your job. I'm sure I have an element of it, too, and so I do public radio work. I work in my office. I do about 3 or 4 things at one time, and that makes me comfortable. Being in one job and doing it from morning to night, I could never do that. Yeah, but now, so do you find that certain foods affect your attention deficit disorder?
Well, I've been trying to be regimented about my eating so that I could find if any of this research held water, but I'm too much of a flake to be regimented about it.
Yeah, well, you know what? Then it may not hold water for you. That may be exactly what it is. It may actually not affect you, but the research is marginal at best. It's what I would call soft science. So I would do whatever works for you, the job, the eating, the other things, and try to handle it in a non-chemical way, which I think is really the way to go, especially with adults. So,
thank you very much.
Sure, thank you very much.
Our pleasure.
And good luck to you. Zorba, let's take a minute to help James, who sent an email to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. James writes, "Hi, guys. I just started a regular weightlifting routine, and I wanted to know what should I look for when shopping for a good protein or weight-gaining powder product?"
Well, if you want to gain weight, you're a young guy or you're a young woman and you want to get more muscle weight, what you really want to do is make sure that you take something that has more protein to it. And generally, the protein shakes, the powder that is in the protein, really are usually soy-based products, and that's all you want to look for, the amount of protein that you get for the price. That's how you judge it. It's protein per price, and calories would be secondary. Usually calories are not the issue. Mm-hmm. So you look at what the cost is per ounce of protein, and it'll tell you right on there. You know the cost of the container. You look at how many servings there are. You do a little math. You look at how much protein there is per serving, and you figure out, you know, per ounce of protein, what am I paying? And that's how I would judge it. I would just base it on that.
Doesn't this soy-based protein. Doesn't this stuff taste different?
Well, they all taste a little different. I mean, some of them.
I would go for the taste. If it costs a little more, but, and I liked it better.
Yeah, but you're going for a protein product. You want to know what's best to build your muscles.
Yeah.
And the answer is protein, not taste, right?
Yeah, but I wouldn't go by the cost so much as by what I liked better if I got a like amount of protein.
Well, that's the difference, Tom. You know, you just don't go by cost. You don't cost compare. You know, you're the spendthrift, Tom. You know, I'm the frugal gourmet. You know, I'm the one who's, you know, always looking at price. You know, that's how it is.
Okay.
But anyway, you're right. You might decide to go for taste. You might decide to go for texture, but it may not be cost.
But the amount of protein
is the amount of
the
protein per serving, which determines whether or not it's going to work for you.
Good. Keep those emails coming. Send your comments, questions, and tips to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Now, you're going to want to stick around for the Medical Myth Buster, which is coming up. Before that, we have some more research to pass along and, of course, more of your calls here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Good to have you along. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Some kind of interesting research, Zorba, before we get back to the phones, on humor and age.
Right. And whether or not humor as you get older is something that's harder to comprehend. And this was a study that looked at that and looked at the aging brain. You know, as we get older, there's certain things we don't do as well. We don't hold digits in our head as well.
Short-term memory tends to go.
I used to be able to remember, you know, digits that were maybe 10 or 15, you know, long. And now I have a phone number. I have to write it down because by the time I'm finished with writing it down, it's not in my brain.
Yeah, I have no doubt that humor can tend to go too. But I'm a little suspicious of the way they did this test, which is stupid.
Well, this particular test is stupid.
Tell us. Okay,
so it was a setup of 16 jokes. First of all, they had adults and college students. So they looked at college students who were 20.
Yep.
They looked at adults who were 65 to 93,
right.
Okay, older adults. They tested everyone for literacy. That wasn't an issue. Comprehension, that wasn't an issue. And then they had the setup for 16 jokes that they read, and then they had to choose the correct punchline.
They did a multiple choice for the punchline.
Multiple choice jokes. That's exactly
right. And the young people got the right punchline.
And the old people didn't. And you decide.
Here's one of the jokes.
Okay, here we go. You're gonna send it to me, right?
Yeah,
so I'm gonna get it. Go for it.
A businessman is riding the subway after a hard A businessman is riding the subway after a hard day at the office. A young man sits next to him and says, "Call me a doctor. Call me a doctor." The businessman asks, "What's the matter? Are you sick?" And then the punchlines. All right. "Call me a doctor, call me a doctor. What's the matter? Are you sick?" The young man pulls out a water gun and squirts the businessman. Now, you think that's funny. Is that what you would...
I think it's funny.
But you're visualizing.
This is a stand-up joke.
That isn't a funny punchline. Okay. The young man says, "My sister is a nurse."
No, that doesn't make any sense.
The young man says, "Yes, I feel a little weak, Please help me.
Well, there's nothing funny about that.
That's not at all funny. Okay. Call me a doctor. Call me a doctor. The businessman asks, what's the matter? Are you sick? The young man says, I just graduated from medical school.
That's
the right answer.
That's funny.
But no.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, not everybody got it right.
Even that's not the funniest joke anybody ever heard.
Well, they
and I'm
say
a little
they were...
suspicious of judging this on the basis of picking the right punchline.
Well, maybe you're right. Maybe we can't judge the aging brain based on whether or not older people get the joke or not. Maybe it's the way the joke is delivered and other things. Nonetheless, humor can be a sign of aging. And if you don't get humor, sometimes that can be the first sign of something going on with your life, depression, anxiety, Alzheimer's disease. But if the joke is stupid, maybe you're not supposed to laugh.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Delafield, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
I am a scuba diver.
Mm-hmm.
I'm diving for 30 years, and all of a sudden I am getting swimmer's ear, which I've never gotten before.
Where do you dive?
I dive in Wisconsin. For the most part, I instruct out here in Wisconsin.
Hmm.
You've got all kinds of, you know, I mean, Lake Michigan, Lake Superior are the most beautiful diving in the area. And we do a lot of instruction to people that do go down to the Caribbean.
I was going to say, save up and go to the Caribbean. It seems to me that'd be a lot nicer, wouldn't
that's
it?
That's where a lot of our students come from.
Yeah.
That's exactly that. Swimmer's ear. Swimmer's ear is from water that stays in the ear, then becomes irritating to the ear. And there are a bunch of medications that are used to treat it. You treat it with basically anti-inflammatory and antibiotic ear drops. Sometimes you need to have an oral medication with it. Sometimes you need to dry the ear out with a hair dryer. The goal is to get that ear dry. What ear drops have you used after you leave your dive? Do you put anything in your ear when you're done in the water?
Well, this is the first time I've ever gotten it. I did a whole week's worth of diving, mm-hmm. and then they started to irritate me. So what I did was I put in, you can go to the local drugstore and you can get the drops that smell like the alcohol. And I put some of that in there for a week, and then with this humidity, I own an automotive repair shop. You're out working. It's very humid. It would come right back again.
Right. Well, first of all, the cure, the treatment for a swimmer's ear is to call your doctor, make sure it is swimmer's ear, and have antibiotic ear drops in your ear. That's what you need. And once that's better, once your swimmer's ear is gone and it feels better, the prevention is to put in the swimmer's ear drops that basically often have glycerin in there to soothe the ear, peroxide and alcohol that basically extract the water from the ear. And that's to keep the ear from bothering you in the first place. So if you still have pain and discomfort, you may want to go to your doc and essentially get drops to cure that. And it may not come again. You know, you haven't gotten rid of it. This may be the only time. But frankly, if you had it now, I would probably use the swimmer ear prevention drops after I dived. You know, or is it dived or dove, by the way?
Dived.
Okay.
I was looking at that this week. In fact, in all the articles, it says dived, and I always thought dove, and it is dived.
Well, I wondered what
I
it is.
And dove, too. I would have said dove.
No. We have grammar police on this show, and they just watch every single thing we say. And if we say something incorrectly, let me tell you, they tell us. And a number of them will chime in on the dived versus dove and where the derivation
is. I'm not sure you guys are right on that.
Well, we will find out. The grammar police are out there listening to tell us what's right.
One more question.
You bet.
Now, one of my customers is a pediatrician, and he said, I'll tell you what we used to use when I was younger. Vinegar, I almost said vinegar and oil. Vinegar, put salad in your ear.
Yeah.
Vinegar and alcohol mixture, 50-50.
Well, that is another treatment that you can use. People use peroxide, they use straight alcohol, they use vinegar and alcohol. Basically, the goal is to displace the water in the ear with something else, and that's often a treatment. Another treatment was sweet oil, which is a type of a lubricant that you get at the drugstore. But I like the swimmer ear drops because they have alcohol, peroxide, and glycerin, and the glycerin is soothing. So I think I'd spend the $3 or $4 that they cost at the store and actually get the good stuff.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And I know dive is the active verb.
Thank you very much for the call. 800-462-7413.
You know those grammar police, if you don't keep track of them, they tell you exactly how to speak all the time.
Yes, they do. Zorba, let's get to our medical myth buster. Today's myth deals with back pain. A common remedy is to use a heating pad. But is that really the best thing for a sore back?
Well, the answer is, at least according to some science, yes. One of the largest studies that looked at essentially how heating pads worked analyzed five different studies and found that 5 days of heat therapy, in other words, heating pad mostly in the form of a wrap or something called a K-pad, which is what we use in the hospital, which is heated water sort of on your back through a pad, tended to reduce the pain more than oral placebos. In other words, you can't make a placebo out of a heating pad. We know right. if things are right. hot.
Yeah.
And more than doing absolutely nothing. So it may work in the acute phase. But let me give a caveat. My experience as a doctor is yeah. it's individual. For some people, heating pads really work well for people. They like it. They like it especially in the winter. They don't like it in the summer when it's too hot. For other people, it doesn't seem to
well,
do
a lot
much.
Of people use either heat or other people use cold or ice.
They use cold. They use ice. And they use chemical.
This study didn't deal with that.
No, this really looked more or less at heat. And the issue with heat is that the idea is that it may improve the circulation of the area. It's an injury. It's not an injury in the fact that you've fallen over something and you don't want to increase the mm-hmm. circulation, that increasing the circulation may help the muscles move. Warmth also helps us often do some exercises. But this is much more effective than the old outmoded myth, which is when you have back pain, you should have bed rest.
Yeah.
Because basically, bed rest after a day or two is all you need for back pain. Well, and the idea of staying in bed for a week or two is a myth.
Well, you mentioned things that heat does. What does cold do then?
Well, once again, it's just something that it certainly doesn't increase the circulation. It decreases it. But if it feels better when you've got back pain, do it.
You don't like to use heat.
When my back bothers me, I love to do my stretching exercises because it helps. And I hate sitting on a heating pad makes me feel old.
Yeah.
So I don't like the feeling.
I tend not to do anything for back pain. And it doesn't go away,
well,
surprisingly.
It doesn't go away. There's your answer.
But I've started doing some stretching stuff, too, for back pain, and it works better for me, too.
Sounds perfect.
Yeah. Don't back off on sending us your myth. We'll try to bust it or prove it right. Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 800-462-7413. Zorba, a listener with us now in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
I guess I was just calling in with an odd question to see if you guys know what's going on with me.
Mm-hmm.
I sneeze after I eat, and the more I eat, like the more full I am, I sneeze a lot. I just go nuts. And then sometimes, like if I have a stomach ache, I'll burp sometimes, or I'll sneeze sometimes, and it'll make my stomach feel a little bit better, or sometimes after I burp, I sneeze.
That's not that odd. We've had other callers in the past
absolutely.
Who have that, and I have that absolutely. Same situation.
You sneeze after you
eat? I tend to sneeze sometimes after a meal.
Oh, so, yeah. What do you do, Tom? Give her the advice.
I sneeze.
That's right, sneezes. That's what it is.
Yeah,
what
like sneezing fits. It's not like one or two. It's like 20.
Oh,
20 sneezes.
Oh, that's
a lot
unusual.
Of sneezes. So what do people say when you go out to the restaurant and you start sneezing?
Well, most of my friends are accustomed to it now, but it is quite odd when I go on a date. I have to explain myself or just eat a very small amount so that it doesn't trigger the sneezing fit.
So it doesn't trigger it. I can just imagine, you know, all of a sudden you're sneezing. You're at a very fancy restaurant, a French restaurant. You start sneezing. The maitre d' comes by and goes, can I help you? And you go, no. Okay.
Or goes, get out of my restaurant.
My doctor's only explanation or initial only explanation was that I'm just very bizarre. He'd never heard of it before. And then he came up with and said that maybe I am allergic to my stomach gases or whatever?
Well, I don't think it's quite that, but there is, what happens is you can have an exaggerated response of one part of the nervous system, and some people have post-gustatory sweating, it's called, where after they eat, they sweat profusely, and they sweat during the meal, and this is a relative of that, where essentially one part of your sympathetic nervous system, the parasympathetic nervous system, is overactive. It produces sweating, and in some cases, it can also produce sneezing. Now, of course, you can sneeze with certain foods, such as pepper and hot food and other mm-hmm. things. My wife, as soon as she eats really super hot food, which she likes, she starts to sweat and she starts to sneeze. But I take it this occurs with everything you eat.
Yeah. it tends to be.
Well, I would recommend, well, first of all, you may grow out of this, believe it or not. Some people have this and eventually it disappears. There are some medications you can take, something called a beta blocker will sometimes work for this. Sometimes an antihistamine will actually work. A drug called Singular that's given for asthma will sometimes work. But for the most part, people don't like taking medications to keep from doing it. And I would say when you go out, you will just have small meals. That's what you do. Small, like a French restaurant or maybe a Spanish restaurant where they have tapas, which means small dishes. You know, I would not recommend going to a buffet where you pile it on and you eat as much as you can because you're going to be sneezy at the buffet.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
No problem. Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye. Before we go, Zorba, let's fulfill our weekly quota of questions from over-the-road truck drivers. This one comes to us from a driver named Mohammed, who calls Columbus, Ohio, home. Mohammed has a big problem. His feet stink. He's wondering if there's anything he can do outside of loading his cab with those little scented trees to stop the source of the odor rather than just covering it up.
Well, absolutely. He should get something from his doctor called Drysol, D-R-Y-S-O-L. And as you can imagine, Drysol is for the soles of the feet. Mm-hmm. And basically, it is a souped-up antiperspirant. It's a souped-up antiperspirant. You put it on, and it will stop the sweating from occurring. Follow the instructions on the bottle. Sometimes it's daily applications until you get it under control, and then it's once or twice a week. And it is highly effective for sweaty feet, and it even works for sweaty hands, and it works for sweaty armpits. So Drysol is the way to go, far better than Right Guard or one of the other antiperspirants that you can buy. It's an aluminum compound that really works and is safe.
That would be very unpleasant to have that problem.
Oh, absolutely.
In your cab.
In your cab, your feet
eight,
stink,
10,
or you know, you're getting out of the cab, or
yeah,
somebody else goes in the cab. And also, remember, smelly feet is associated with this idea that you're not clean. I mean, it's thought of as a hygiene issue, and for a lot of people, it is not a hygiene issue at all. So good luck.
Yeah, and you don't have to be a truck driver to join the fun. Send us your comments, questions, and tips in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We'll see you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can bug our producer anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director, and Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0901Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.